Today's episode is brought to you by the Western Extension Risk Management Education Center, USDA NIFA, and the University of Hawaii College of Tropical Ag and Human Resources, and the Livestock Extension Group, and the University of Nebraska-Lincoln Center for Ag Profitability.
Aloha and welcome to the Livestock Vala'au, a podcast aimed to provide educational support, information, guidance, and outreach to our livestock stakeholders in Hawaii and in the West. We are your hosts, Mele Oshiro and Shannon.
Sam! That's me.
Today we're going to be talking with Shannon Wilson, who is a graduate student. Actually, she's now a PhD student with the University of Hawaii, working on projects involving the two-line spittlebug. Thank you, Shannon Wilson. So we're going to try not to get confused today, and I'm going to call you guys by your last name, Shannon and Wilson.
That's fine.
So that our listeners kind of know which Shannon's talking here. I hope that's okay.
That's fine.
But yeah, so if you want to just give a little bit of introduction about yourself, a little background, and why we pulled you here today to come and talk on the podcast.
All right. Well, as Mele said, my name is Shannon Wilson. I'm currently a PhD candidate in entomology at UH Manoa, and I've actually been researching the two-line spittlebug for the past 5 years, mainly focusing on its biology, ecology, and management.
Yeah, I think it's important for us to talk a little bit about the ecology of the two-line spittlebug, especially the ecology of it here in Hawaii, because I feel like that's,
because it's very specific. I mean, I think it's also, but it's also like, Yeah, it's basically like right climate, right timing type of thing.
Exactly.
Is what it sounds like it's happened.
Everything likes to grow in Hawaii, right? Everything likes to survive over here. We don't have the cold seasons like everywhere else does to kind of manage some populations.
Everywhere else has cold seasons. Florida doesn't, which is why it's a problem in the Southeast.
Well, exactly, right? So yeah, do you, Shannon Wilson, you want to talk a little bit about the ecology of two-line spittlebug here in Hawaii?
So spittlebugs are plant-sucking insects that feed on the xylem sap of their hosts. And the two-line spittlebug in its native range has been reported on over 40 different hosts, including forage grasses, all turf grass species, and some Ilex hollies. They prefer wet and humid conditions, and in their native range, they have about 2 to 3 generations per year, which is pretty consistent with what we're seeing here in Hawaii, with peak activity occurring between about April through August, give or take. We do detect some in March through October typically. So the peaks in abundance typically coincide with the return of the rainy season because they like those wet, humid conditions. The common name spittlebug is derived from their behavior during the nymph stage. So the nymphs are creamy yellow colored with brown heads. And once they hatch, they immediately seek out feeding sites at the base of the grass. They start sucking the xylem sap, and then they begin to continuously excrete hundreds of white, frothy bubbles of feeding waste out of their anus to form that spittle mass, which is where they reside as they transform into adults, and it protects them from predators and desiccation. Once they become adults, they no longer produce spittle, but they do develop the ability to jump to evade predators. And the adults are black. They have black wings with red to orangish stripes traversing the forewings. And when they lift their wings or spread their wings in flight, you can see their bright red tops of their abdomens. Let's see. The entire life cycle from hatch to egg laying adult is about 50 to 76 days, depending on the temperature and humidity conditions. However, the eggs can overwinter and essentially undergo a period of dormancy to wait and hatch when favorable environmental conditions return. So since winter conditions in Hawaii are less severe compared to the native range, that's concerning because this pest may be able to persist year-round without a period of dormancy.
Yeah, it seems like a really long time, I believe, that you... working on and been part of that two-line spittlebug team. So you've done, I believe, your program now, your PhD candidate, but really your research started as a graduate or master's student. Is that correct? You want to maybe share maybe on that end kind of where you started and, you know, what that project and research was done in that area?
basically, when I started grad school as a master's student with the two-line spittlebug, one of my main research objectives was quantifying the distribution and abundance of the two-line spittlebug. And we did this by surveying different transects across 4 high-risk Kona ranches.
Monthly, I want to say. Wasn't it monthly?
Yes, yeah. They were so, monthly
a lot,
field
days. Yeah, yeah. A lot of data.
Ultimately, we did that for just about 5 years. So
yeah,
a lot of data. Yeah. We were collecting data on nymph abundance, what hosts we were finding them on, as well as plant species composition, so that we can look at those changes in the plant species in the plant community over time. And then once I became a PhD student, I actually started investigating management tactics, which I'll get into later. So I kind of just expanded on what I was already doing.
Right. And so that initial work really gave you some guidelines and things that pushed you into the more of the detailed stuff that you're working on now as a PhD candidate. So and looking at, I think what we really want to talk about is some of the forage trials and things that you folks been doing. So do you want to maybe start and share a little bit about that stuff?
Yeah. So back in 2020, I first started some grass experiments. So the reason that I started investigating host plant resistance as a management tactic is because it's commonly accepted as the most effective method to combat spittlebugs. This is because it's generally considered low cost, sustainable, environmentally sound. It's compatible with other tactics and normal ranch operations. Mm-hmm. Plus, tactics commonly employed against other pests in other regions just may not be feasible for the two-line spittlebug in Hawaii. For example, controlled burning, which is implemented in Georgia and Florida, may be too risky here because our rangelands are interspersed with native forests and there's a lot of native species. Additionally, chemical control is also difficult because if it's just most likely too costly and difficult to apply that chemical across thousands of acres of pasture land. Plus, you would need to penetrate through the thick thatch of grass that the spittlebugs are under. And the nymphs are protected by what's called a spittle mass. Plus, if you're spraying for adults, by the time adult damage becomes evident, it's often too late to spray because those adults will either be dispersed to new areas or already dead. So that's why I decided to investigate host plant resistance. I thought it was a more promising strategy specifically for the two-line spittlebug on Hawaii's rangelands. So I started in 2020 by investigating the susceptibility of different grass species and varieties. And then I continued that in 2021 and tested additional varieties. So basically what I did was infest different grass species with adult spittlebugs. And after 12 days of infestation, I evaluated them for plant damage based on a visual damage scale from the International Center for Tropical Agriculture, where they have a really great resistance breeding and screening program for grass cultivars for spittlebugs. And then in 2020, I also did a different grass experiment looking at the effect of increasing densities of adults on kikuyu grass. So in 2020, I infested kikuyu grass pots with different levels of adults. So I did 0, 5, 10, and 15 adults. And then I also evaluated them for visual damage on that same damage scale. And I also obtained the dry weights and the fresh weights of the biomass and the roots. And then in 2022, I expanded on these infestation levels because in 2020, I ultimately found that 10 adults per square foot appeared to be a significant threshold for kikuyu survivability to an attack by adult two-line spittlebugs. Mm-hmm. So that's why in 2022, I tested even more infestation levels. So I looked at 0, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, and 15 adults. And that year, I actually found that 7 adults per square foot was a significant threshold for
That's amazing, because that's not very many, is it? It
does, no.
Doesn't seem like a whole lot at all to like take over that much space, as small
yeah.
as Yeah, as small as they are.
I want to take a quick step back right now, because we I don't know if we really explained this. I know Mark came on a podcast a while back talking about Two Line Spittlebug and sort of the damage that you see based on the different stage, I should say, ages of the bug, right? So it's the adult. I want people to understand that it's the adult spittlebug, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the adult spittle that actually causes more damage to the plant than the nymphs, correct?
Yes. So okay. Both nymphs and adults contribute to reduced productivity for land use for cattle production.
Right.
However, the most significant damage is inflicted by adults. Their feeding basically induces phytotoxemia, which mm-hmm. ends up interfering with photosynthesis. And that ultimately leads to reduced forage availability and quality through the loss of productivity and decreased nutritional value, palatability, and digestibility. Right. Whereas nymphs, they do cause water stress and decrease productivity. However, they do not kill the plant outright, which the adults can.
Good. Well, yeah. And well, that's interesting. So later, your second study, I didn't realize that you had less amount of adults that actually per square foot, you said, that caused damage.
Yes.
Wow, that's interesting. So yes. What was some of the conclusions you think behind that reasoning of why you think the lower count? Do you think it's
Well, I think that basically the cuckoo grass at that level of adults just could not recover from the feeding damage inflicted. Mm-hmm. And I also found that in both years, there was a significantly lower dry matter weight for both the biomass and the roots in the infested plants versus the uninfested control plants. Mm. So clearly there's above ground effects, but there's also below ground effects. So they're just impacting everything.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Then you get complete die off of some of those species. Now, you only tested Kikuyu on that sense. Was there another forage species? I mean, we have a few others that are in there, but I mean, our Kikuyu was our majority of forage grass that was in those impacted areas. Did you see any results from any of the other species?
For the susceptibility trials, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the seven species that showed resistance, six of those are from either Brazil or Colombia. And then also fountain grass did show resistance against the adults, which is obviously one of the major grasses we see out there, especially mm-hmm. between the northern boundary of the two-line spittlebug and Waimea, which we're really trying to keep it out of there.
Right, exactly. But yeah, and that was, I know one of the things we talked about early on in the project was hoping that that fountain grass and sort of that area would kind of create a boundary to keep that spittlebug in the more northern corner region. So
yeah, at this point, we're not sure what the mechanism of resistance is and if that's the same for nymphs versus adults. So I think that's something in the future that will be important to look at and determine is, why are these grasses resistant versus others being susceptible?
Right. Yeah.
And the mechanism behind it.
Right. Yeah. Because we did talk about some of that different structures on the grass and whatnot. Yeah. That could be impeding some of that and helping it be a little bit more resistant. So those trials you did were all in the greenhouse. Mm-hmm. And now we're doing some a little bit different ones because we found some. This is a little bit different part because this is looking at the sort of grasses now we're talking about that have some resistance. So do you want to talk a little bit about that grass trial that they put all those amazing forage plots out there that y'all work so hard? No one will ever appreciate how hard it was for you guys to put those in, man. And it just how much work went into that. So
Yeah, it was a lot of work, but I'm really hoping we'll get some good results and I think it'll all be worth it in the end. But basically, we wanted to see if the resistance we've observed in the greenhouse is going to translate to the field, because that's what's most important. Is this going to work actually in the pasture setting? So we manually established 9 different field plots across an elevation gradient, and each field plot contained 8 different grass species. We established those in 2021, so we had to wait for them to grow. So we began collecting data in those field plots last year, so 2022. So the data is still kind of preliminary. We still need to collect more, but we've been collecting data on nymph abundance in those grasses, as well as their ability to establish across the highly variable growing conditions on the ranches, as well as the damage that we've been seeing. And then eventually we want to look at the impact of cattle grazing on nymph abundance. So the idea will be to split that field plot up in half and let the cows in and see if they'll even eat the grass.
Right.
That's important. But also to see if grazing can be used as a cultural management practice to impact the nymph population, because grazing indirectly impacts the nymph microclimate just by exposing them basically to the elements. They need wet, humid conditions to survive. So reducing thatch buildup can dry out their little microclimate.
Right. Oh, cool.
Yes. And so for folks that aren't aware or are familiar with spittlebugs, they literally live in this little, the nymphs anyways, live in this little spit mass, and they need to have that moisture in order for them to survive. So as Shannon said, you know, grazing, I mean, initially that was really a response that we had and management tactic that was going on was to remove the grass that was there, creates the exposure of the nymphs and sort of drier climate for them to help reduce the population. But now is an opportunity for us to actually test those types of theories that we had and see what's going to work best. And it also collected sort of the nymph abundance. And you said that, so we came to sort of a threshold for the amount of nymphs as well, I want to say, similar to like how you did for adults, right?
Yeah, so we were estimating initially around 50 to 60 adults per meter squared is when you should definitely be implementing some sort of management, which is pretty consistent with what I found for the 7 adults per square foot threshold.
Yeah.
Definitely translates.
Yeah. So you've done sort of two different, I think, I'm going to leave it to Sam. Do you have any other questions for Shannon?
I mean, I'm just kind of, I know how bad the two-line spittlebug has been on Big Island and stuff, but to hear it's only 7 in a square foot, I mean, that's not very much. I would imagine that, I mean, to me, that's just amazing, I guess. I'm like, whoa, that's.
Yeah.
To me, that's like a potential for a very fast population explosion and taking over and causing a lot of damage, which it has. I mean, it's caused a lot of damage. It's been about 2 years, I think, since we've had Mark on here to talk about it. But like,
yeah,
I recall the pictures of like the changes in the pattern from the two-line spittlebug. I mean, the growth was just exponential, and your research seems to kind of support like how little it took to just really take over that. And I'm just amazed. I mean, you know, I've seen the pictures, but like I said, it's just shocking to hear 7. That's not very many.
Yeah. So we think what is happening is basically Kikuyu grass is derived from Africa.
Yes.
Whereas spittlebugs, or at least this particular spittlebug, evolved in the New World tropics and subtropics. So there's basically no co-evolutionary history between the two organisms. So Kikuyu grass just hasn't developed defense mechanisms against two-line spittlebug feeding, which is likely why it's highly susceptible.
Yeah, so the two-line spittlebugs think they're eating candy, and Kikuyu grass just has no defense mechanism, basically. Sorry. I have to dumb it down for myself, so tell me if it's wrong, Shannon Wilson.
No, but those that I think when we had Mark Thorne on the last time talking about two-line spittlebug, I think we're at somewhere around 35,000 acres a year. Is Shannon Wilson, do you know if that's still sort of where we're at as far as impact from the spittlebug?
Yeah. So the last estimate we made of its range expansion is now over 178,000 acres. And it's likely that it will continue to expand and disperse into new locations. So we really want to prevent the spread into new areas and to other islands.
I mean, that's huge, because it's only been a couple years since Mark was on here.
Yeah. So as far as, so your two projects, I mean, looking at two different things, right? Looking at the impact and susceptibility of Kikuyu to how much spittles can impact it. And then our forage sort of trials that are going on in the field. What can this mean for our producers and sort of the cattle industry, or kind of advice then from what you've currently, what you've done, and what can you share with them that might be useful for them in their production?
Well,
I mean, that's a kind of a loaded question. I get it. And I know that there's, I mean, there's so much, you know, but as far as like, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is kind of what's your hope from these projects that we'll be able to get information to be able to share with them and, maybe help some of their management strategies out there.
Yeah. Well, the unfortunate reality is Kikuyu grass is highly susceptible. So really deep-rooted conventional ranching practices may need to be adjusted a bit, mm-hmm. and we may need to just replace Kikuyu grass with more resistant and tolerant forage grass varieties. But before we go out planting those seeds, we want to make sure they not only show resistance in the greenhouse, but also in the field setting. And another step will be determining how we can even effectively apply those seeds over thousands of acres of pasture. Right. So that'll be another huge component.
Yeah.
And we also really want to determine what grazing intensity and duration can effectively reduce nymph abundance while still maximizing production.
Right. So like, is there an optimal, right, where all the lines cross basically?
Yeah. Which we've not yet determined.
Yeah, and I guess that's a big question, because the nymphs live so closely to the soil surface. I mean, and it goes against all grazing management rules, right? when you talk about grazing, you're like, no, you don't go lower than 4 inches. But at that 4 inch height, yeah. or so, 4-6 inch height, depending on your grass species, you're grazing, you really still give a good environment for the nymphs to survive, right? So, it's a tough one. And it's great to have you, Shannon, as a student and graduate and now a PhD candidate, to be working on this and to transfer from your master's program into PhD to continue working on this. I think is very valuable for the industry, because you have that knowledge and background already, sort of the ecology that's going on, which, you know, really where it all started, right? And I remember when Shannon first started as a master's student. So, yeah. Yeah, and I think we'll probably pull Mark on here for another update and whatnot.
That would
but
be good. I mean, just the research you're doing, I think, is very important, because like the spread of this pest has just, mm-hmm. I mean, it's spreading. It spread very quickly, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the unfortunate thing in other areas in the states where it's two line spittle bug is a problem, they sort of had the seasons, right? And you want to
like she said, there are options. So controlled burn, like here, even in Nebraska, it's done. It's very much like normal. But then also, you know, there are probably, and I don't know, there are chemical options or whatever, you know, it's just, yeah, it's a lot harder for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are there any other management, or not to say other impacts to the two-line spittle bug in the states that sort of have, I mean, it's really been, I think, is it just more so the, opportunities for them to have other management strategies, or the seasons that really impact the sort of biology of the bug and make it to be a little bit more controlled? Because I know it's a big problem down in the southern states as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's native to the southeast United States. And there it does impact rangelands, but it's primarily a turf grass pest there. So it impacts the landscape industry. So their practices that they implement in turf grass is to reduce the thatch buildup. So they implement practices like mowing and verticutting. They also may apply fertilizer to improve the cultivar tolerance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Also reducing irrigation to simulate drought conditions. And the use of tolerant grass cultivars and the application of sand or a soil mixed top dressing. But when they have looked at pastures in the Southeast. They have implemented mowing and grazing to reduce that litter accumulation and thatch buildup, indirectly impact the nymph microclimate. And they also implemented controlled burning to destroy eggs and nymphs near the soil surface, as well as raking and disking. But less has been, pasture management has been less of a focus there compared to grass. Which, you know, indicates to us here that this is not only a rancher problem. It has the potential to impact the landscape trade, so golf courses, urban landscapes, homeowners, as well as neighboring conservation areas. These neighboring conservation areas can benefit from well-managed rangelands since they provide watershed services, they promote carbon sequestration and soil health, suppress weeds and feral ungulates, and reduce the risk of fire and erosion. So without these grasses as a buffer, weeds can invade and threaten the nearby native forest. So this is not just a rancher problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's a very good point. Very good point. Yeah, it is. It's a statewide problem. So I'm glad to see that, you know, we're getting the funding to help continue the research and things. I know one other question that I know you guys get thrown a lot in Two Lions Bit of a Team. Is there any talk or discussion about biocontrol agents for Two Lions Bit of a Book?
Yeah, so there's actually a predatory hoverfly. It's in the serpent family down in Colombia, and it is a specialist predator of spittlebugs, which makes it potentially an ideal candidate for classical biocontrol. So that means going and finding that in Colombia and potentially introducing it here. What makes it a good candidate is that it likely wouldn't have any non-target impacts because it is a spittlebug specialist. It's just about the only thing that can penetrate through that spittle mass. They lay their eggs in there.
Interesting.
And the larvae feed on the nymphs. So we don't have any native spittlebugs in Hawaii. And the only other two species were introduced, and they don't have any known.
I feel like they're pests anyways, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, they're an invasive species. So we are talking about that. That's part of our discussion about future directions, and it's definitely holds potential.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting too. I don't know if you want to share about it, but there were two other sort of. Was it a fungus that's already kind of locally native to the area that we've found? Like you've worked with Daniel Peck, who's a like the guru, right, of Two Lions Bit of a Bug, I would call him. But right, you want to talk a little bit about that because that was pretty interesting. That's a local thing here. I mean, it's not something that we can probably readily populate, but interesting that there are some impacts from other things out there to the spittle bug.
Yeah, it's good that basically Mother Nature is kicking in and trying to help out. back in, I think it was August 2019, at about 1,400 meters in elevation, we detected an epizootic of Entomothorales fungi on spittlebug adults. So it basically just looked like the adults were paralyzed on the stems of grasses, and then their wings would spread out, and you could see the fungus. It looks like a fuzzy white stuff coming out of them. So unfortunately, that fungus is probably way too difficult to commercialize. But it is good news that we have been detecting it, and we've been detecting it more and more each year. So that is
natural,
positive
natural news. Predators, out there, which is good. Good, very good. Well, thank you. I don't know, San, you got any more questions for?
No. I'm just excited to see where your research goes in the future and like how it progresses, because it sounds like you already have kind of started working on your next steps and your next chapter of your dissertation or thesis. I'm not sure what you want to call it, but the next chapter is probably more like multiple, but so it'll be exciting to see how it goes. And, you know, hopefully it should at least provide additional information and hopefully management, like you said, some management guidance and stuff. So,
yeah,
which would be helpful because, you know, it's, I mean, that's a lot of explosion of growth and takeover. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So our goal is, you know, to develop an effective and efficacious integrated pest management program.
Yep.
So that's one of our main directions in our research. And we just want to give ranchers tools that are going to be effective.
Yeah. And if you haven't heard yet, there is a two-line spittlebug app as well.
Yes.
You know, that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we did share about that, I think.
October.
Yeah. A while
was
back.
When it got launched, right? Was mm-hmm. it October?
Yeah. So it's just a way for us to sort of track where the two-line spittlebug is. Yeah. You can use it for identification. There's all kinds of other useful tools and information in there. And so these, the information that becomes from Shani Wilson's research and all the information that she gathers can go into management strategies and tools that they can input into these, into the app to be used later. So yeah. Yeah. They're very distinct when you go and look down into the grass. And so I guess some of the other things that you notice, kind of what people have noticed to know that there was two-line spittlebug in their pastures was sort of those yellowing and kind of random dead spots out there in your pasture.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's one.
Yeah. Ranchers were noticing patches of dying grass surrounded by healthy grass. Mm-hmm. And it was reminiscent of herbicide application. Mm-hmm. So that was the first signs of the two-line spittlebug that were noticed.
Yeah.
And then eventually they ended up finding the insect and identifying it.
Yeah. So that's one sign that, you know, folks that are maybe not in the impacted area, taking an notice of your pastures is very important at this point to understand. And if you, you know, you see something unusual, get down in there and kind of look down at the base. The nymphs are always at the bottom of the closer to the soil surface of the grass. So
yeah. Just dig through the grass and look for white frothy bubbles.
Yeah, look for spit, really. That's what it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's unusual. Like, I know when we first started finding, like, the adults, they're in the spittle mass mm-hmm. as they start to get older, but the mass, it's weird. It, like, the spit mass dries out kind of in a sense. Yeah, Shannon, I don't know mm-hmm. to say that you can still find an adult, but it'll come out of their, you know, start to climb out of that as they get older. So
yeah, so that's the tenural adult stage.
Yeah.
So that's basically when they're in their last nymphal stage and they transform into an adult and they're still not fully their dark mature adult color, and then they pop out of the spittle mass and fully mature.
I think it's really good information. And yeah, anything else you think of that you want to share as far as with our producers and sort of, you know, kind of what does this mean for our cattle industry here in Hawaii? I mean, ultimately, we are on very, in some areas, very rough terrain. It's not accessible with machinery to reseeding and doing weed control. Majority of it is going to have to be by hand, or we're going to have to find other resources or tools to use to be able to reseed. And
maybe someone
areas.
Will have a drone or something figured out that could do that. Who knows? Technology is really going now. So
I'd love to figure out that drone. I tell you, I think in some senses that'll be beneficial, whether it be for applying herbicide or, you know, seeding technology, I think. Cool. Well, thank you, Shannon Wilson, for joining us today and sharing with us about your all the great research. And, you know, for those that don't know, Shannon Wilson has done so much research out there. And like even that two-line spittlebug team putting in all those forage plots, you all deserve more than just a round of applause, because some of those areas are really rough. And being out there, rain or shine, these guys are out there. So I give you all credit. Good on you for doing all that. And I think you're providing very valuable information for our industry. So
yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Shannon.
Yeah. Wilson. Thanks for having me.
So, well, we hope our listeners found this informative and that it will be useful to them. Also, if you haven't done so already, please be sure to fill out our feedback fest and let us know your thoughts about this podcast and what you'd like to hear going forward.
And then make sure to follow us on our social media pages, the Livestock Valaʻau Livestock Extension Group, if you haven't already. And be sure to visit the UHCTAR Extension website and our YouTube channel, which will be listed in the show notes.
And for additional information about this topic, obviously see the show notes of the podcast in the description box of our YouTube page. Thanks for listening to the Livestock Vala Owl. And before we go, show some love for your favorite podcast. It's us. By leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to this podcast. And then stay tuned for the next podcast.
Yeah. Thanks again to our sponsors, the Western Extension Risk Management Education Center, USDA NEFA, the Livestock Extension Group, CTAR, and the University of Nebraska Lincoln Center for Ag Profitability. Mahalo nui, everyone, for listening. Ahui ho.
Ahui ho.